banking, financing, insurance. These are among some of the less exciting aspects of the cannabis industry.
I like to tell my businesses, I am going to be the most intrusive person you have ever met in your life. I'm going to know more about your business than your spouse does.
One of the really frustrating things about being a cannabis employee is you have a W-2, you have paychecks, you're getting your taxes taken out, you're doing everything right. And in many ways, cannabis is far more stable than other industries like the hospitality industry, for example, over the last couple of years. But it can be difficult to find someone who's willing to write a mortgage or refinance your house.
I don't know if it's a generational thing, if it's a personality thing. We all know people that are still morally against this. And so they shun it completely. So I even have coworkers that go, I don't want to touch cannabis, it's a curse word to them. And that'll never go away.
This is Growing Forward, a collaborative podcast between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report about cannabis in New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, a New Mexico PBS correspondent and the news director at KUNM Public Radio.
I'm Andy Lyman with New Mexico Political Report. In our last episode, we spoke with a former New Mexico politician and a current cannabis banking expert who now lives in Florida about some of the misconceptions about cannabis banking and financing.
After we published that episode, which highlighted the difficulties for cannabis businesses to find funding, Albuquerque-based Southwest Capital Bank contacted us and said even our episode on misconceptions included some incorrect information.
Our first big mistake was incorrectly identifying one of our guests. Lonnie Talbert, who is a former Bernalillo County Commissioner, was previously the Chief Operations Officer for Southwest Capital Bank. We incorrectly identified him as the Chief Executive Officer, so we'd like to apologize for that mistake.
But we also learned that even though many banks around the country will not issue business loans to cannabis businesses, Southwest Capital is dipping its toes into that aspect of cannabis banking. To learn more about that, we attended a panel presented by the New Mexico chapter of NAOP, a commercial real estate development organization.
I like to tell my businesses, I am going to be the most intrusive person you have ever met in your life. I'm going to know more about your business than your spouse does.
That's Shannon Cox, who is in charge of compliance at Southwest Capital. She told panel attendees that cannabis businesses should come to prospective banks and lenders fully prepared and be fully transparent.
This industry comes with a whole different set of problems and compliance associated with it. It can be done, and there are people out there that can help you. Search out a good, well-known consultant, get legal help, talk to that CPA, and most of all, have your business organized already. Don't go out on the internet, download something that you think is going to apply to your business, fill it out and bring it in to me. It's not going to work. I need to make sure that those documents are correct. You need to be registered. I will open an account before you're licensed, because in most cases you need to have a bank account to get things started. That's fine, but we're going to track your process with RLDCCD and make sure that you've applied and you're going through that process.
Just as Southwest Capital was one of the first banks in New Mexico to start a special cannabis business department, Shannon told us that the company is now extending their services.
We have recently jumped into the lending game. We are taking applications right now. We originally were rolling it out to somebody with at least 3 or 4 years of experience with us, but now that we're a little more comfortable with the industry, of course there are other aspects that could help you with that lending. I can't go into specifics, of course, but yes, we feel that it's a valid industry and we're happy to provide the services.
Was this sort of like the big announcement that you guys are getting into lending, or has this been...
You know, it's not such a big announcement. We've been looking at it for several years, and there's always that risk factor out there. So we wanted to make sure that our compliance program was top grade before we started offering new services. We feel that we've got a good program now. We've got a very experienced lending staff, which is critical, and we feel that we're ready to go forward on it.
do you have to, maybe you can't talk about this, but do you have to charge a higher rate? Do you have to have more collateral? How do you hedge against risk?
It's credit requirements just like in any other industry. I won't go into specifics on pricing or anything. Of course, there's a risk to it. The risk factor is there. So like anything cannabis related, it's probably going to be a little higher than standard industries. But we're not out there to gouge anybody. We want to be fair. We want to be competitive. And we want to provide a good service.
Is that risk that the federal government could seize assets from the company? Is that the risk that you're speaking of?
Well, think about it. If you're lending to a customer and something happens and CCD comes in and seizes their business, or the federal government comes in and closes them down, you've lost your collateral. So yes, that's the risk factor that we face.
I would imagine that risk is still there, but it's less. We heard somebody talk up there how the federal government sort of saying, we're just not going to put money towards it, right? So they're sort of showing signs they're not going to seize it unless they're actually doing something really criminal, right?
That's correct. They still have to toe the line and they have to follow the federal mandates. But I think that, as I said on stage, I really believe they want the cash in this industry within the regular banking system. And they realize that these are businesses that need funding and businesses that need financial services. So while they won't tell us it's okay, and they still come in and look at my program with a magnifying glass, I think that they're fine with us going that route, as long as we're compliant and careful.
Shannon told the crowd at the panel that until cannabis is federally legal, the process of banking and securing loans for cannabis businesses can seem long and overly complicated. But she said federal legalization will likely come with its own banking complications.
If I had a crystal ball, I'd say that eventually there's going to be a federal legalization of some point, of some kind. But at the same time, be careful what you wish for, because then you've got all of the regulatory burden that comes down on you too. And I wouldn't even guess on a timeline on that as to when it happens. But it's a fine dance. You know, the state has legalized it. It's a valid industry. We want to provide services to that industry. Same time, you've got the government that will never tell you it's okay to do it. But I think they really want us to do it as well. They don't want this cash unsecured somewhere. They want this cash in the system. They want to be able to track it. They want to know what the data is. And they want it safely banked. So even though they can't tell us to do that, that's really what they want us to do. If it does become federally legal, like I said, you're going to see a whole new slew of banking regulations come down on us. And since every state has their own way of doing that, they've got to wade those waters, try to figure out how to legalize this so that it fits every state program. And I think that's going to be the challenge. In Washington, you've got the people out there for the pharmaceutical industry. They don't want it legalized. And you've got the people out there in the law enforcement. You know, it's still pretty lucrative for law enforcement for this to be illegal in the way of seizures, if they fund a lot of their special programs that way. So you've got two really big groups fighting against it, and that's the big stopping point, to be honest with you. The states want to see it happen. The banks want to see it happen. There are a lot of industries that want to see it happen, but I think it's going to be 5 years would be early, I would say.
What is the competitive landscape like right now?
Well, right now, I know that my main competitor is looking at a lending program as well. I do not believe that they have started yet. So traditional institution lending, as far as I know, we're the only ones doing it at this point.
Okay.
I anticipate that many more are going to watch us, see if we succeed at it, and they're kind of trying to gauge the waters from that.
That was also true for just taking deposits, right? From just the observation, I don't want to say this definitively, but I feel like US Eagle was after Southwest Capital and just the doing business. So maybe, like you're saying, other banks will see that you can do this and maybe take that risk as well?
That's exactly true. You know, and U.S. Eagle did a great job. They sat back, they engaged a legal staff, they really, really educated themselves and wrote a great program and learned from our mistakes, because we jumped in and we made mistakes. But they've got a great program. We've got a great program. Other banks are watching us because, you know, lending is soft right now. There's not a great demand. We're still coming out of the COVID situation, and people are not ready to jump back into borrowing yet. So, and cannabis, you know, they have to go out to the fringe lenders and investors, and that can be risky for them. And that can be expensive for them too, because of course they're going to pay higher fees there.
We heard about the risk that financial institutions take when banking cannabis companies during the last episode. But there's also a level of risk for cannabis companies themselves. And one of the panelists at the event knows about that risk quite literally.
Fortunately, we've had a couple explosions in the state. So different types of operations are more dangerous than others, as you can imagine. With the property crime, you know, retail side, there's that too. So depending on if you all have land or have buildings that you have cannabis clients in, I really encourage you to talk to myself or talk to your agent. On our side, there's also not a ton of expertise for whatever reason. We were talking about this earlier. I don't know if it's a generational thing, if it's a personality thing. We all know people that are still morally against this, and so they shun it completely. So I even have coworkers that go, I don't want to touch cannabis. It's a curse word to them, and that'll never go away. I have other coworkers that, whether they're getting to the end of their career or not, they don't want to learn it. It's a whole new sub-industry of our industry. And so there's just very little expertise. I mean, it's brand new also. That doesn't help anything, but there's only a few experts.
That's Kenny Bird, a vice president of HUB, an insurance brokerage firm. Kenny said the inherent risks involved with running a cannabis business can make it hard to find an insurance provider.
So I'm a broker, so I work with the big players. And so right now what we're having problems with is the insurance market is so small for cannabis clients that the price is larger. So what we're trying to do is help our clients by getting the prices to come down by having more competition. They've already very much said, and I don't blame them, it's federally illegal, and the second they get into it, they're part of what's called the RICO Act, and so then now they are involved in illegal drug activity. Nobody wants that black eye, and so a lot of the big players just aren't touching it, and they're also in risk management themselves, so the best way to manage risk is probably don't break the law. So that's kind of where that came from.
As we've discussed on the podcast before, New Mexico's Cannabis Regulation Act allows for consumption lounges where cannabis users could theoretically use cannabis, similarly to having drinks at a bar. There are a handful of licensed consumption areas in the state, but again, it all comes back to risk.
Counties have the right to choose that. I think Santa Fe is one of the few ones that where we've written a couple of consumption lounges in Santa Fe, and it's all about risk. And so when you're consuming on my property, and then you leave, it's no different than a bar. So if I'm drinking at home and I go get in a car wreck, the bar doesn't get in trouble. If I go to a cannabis dispensary and I buy cannabis and I go home, it's a lot harder to say the cannabis, you know, the entity is going to get in trouble for that. But if I am consuming at their location after I buy it and then I choose to drive and get in an accident, I'm on the hook, but who's more on the hook is the bigger pocket. Well, the bigger pocket is the dispensary. So there is some risk mitigation to be done there.
How much does it factor in when you consider that we don't have designated servings or appropriate levels of intoxication, right? When you're talking about consuming on property, right? You can't say you overserved him because we don't know what that means, right?
Good point. We're in the Wild West. I mean, as far as all that goes, and with alcohol, it's the easy one. 0.08, country agrees. 0.08 is the number. With cannabis, I could smoke every single day and have this high count, but I didn't smoke today, so I'm complete sound mind and body today, but you take a hair follicle or you know, do that. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to try to figure it out as we go, but as of right now, nobody knows, and the court systems are going to have to make those decisions.
Just thinking there's got to be another separate level of production sites, right? You've got lights and all sorts of hazards that go on. Is that... mold. Is that most of the business for insurance companies or the grow sites? So
you're bringing up a few good examples. So obviously heavy electrical means fires, you know, so there's that risk on that side of it. Mold is another one that can cause problems. The biggest one that in my opinion, we're going to start seeing because now it's not just medical, it's rec, is what's called product liability. So I went to a cannabis store, I took your product and it made me ill or it caused a reaction or. And it's not even that it did, it's the accusation that it did. Because what if I went to, you know, a steak restaurant the night before and I got food poisoning from the steak restaurant, but then I also used that night from your product? Well, who was it? Was it the steak or was it the cannabis product? The courts don't care. It's if my entity gets sued, insurance has to cover the defense cost. And so
it's sort of the thing that, like, no matter how frivolous a lawsuit is, you still have to take the time to fight it. Right?
Anybody can sue anybody for anything, and you have to defend it. And so when you're talking about cannabis, you ingest it into your body, and if I use that product, and so that's what the product liability claims. Well, when it's medical, it's a lot, you know, you had to go to a doctor to make sure that you could take it. You go to your medical professional at the cannabis store, and then you get a relationship with them because there's so few people that do it. Well, now if I'm 18, you know, if I'm just out about and buy something, that's a lot more people buying it, which means you're going to have people having reactions to things. And so there's going to be more lawsuits due to product liability is where we're going to see a huge, huge uptick.
And probably a lot of education things, right? Like, don't take this gummy when you get in the car after you, even if it's not a consumption area.
Yeah,
right?
don't eat the paint, you know, like, the warning labels of everything was because somebody did it at one point and then a court had to rule. It's back to that. The courts are going to start ruling based on some things. So they might even have to start asking questions, you know, when's the last time you had a drink, you know, because then if you're mixing and matching, you know, whether it be pills and marijuana or alcohol and marijuana, there might have to be some more. It's back to courts. Courts are going to decide, and then the state's going to regulate based on those decisions.
Are there expansion, you might have touched on this, but besides cannabis-related businesses, are you working with brokers to write policies for companies that have nothing to do with cannabis, but they might have employees who are ingesting?
Absolutely. So cannabis is, because it's still so small in our state, while I'm an expert in it, my book of business is mostly construction and nonprofits. So with those clients, that was what I kind of touched on, was work comp claims. Because now you have insureds that are drug testing after an accident. And so that doesn't matter what industry you're in. If I'm an employee and I choose to take marijuana on my own time, and then that's on Saturday, and then on Monday I have a horrible accident, you know, with a forklift, my employer's gonna drug test me. Well, you had cannabis in your system. Yeah, but I wasn't high today. Well, with alcohol, it's easy because you're drunk or you're not. Well, with cannabis, it's in your system. And so then having a medical card was one of the big pieces of advice that I give to everybody. You're most protected if you can qualify for a medical cannabis card. Because then it's, here's my medical cannabis card. I took some on Saturday because I have a chronic illness, injury, et cetera, et cetera. And so then it's, oh, okay, that makes sense. Versus more questions if I'm just doing it on my own.
So what does that mean if you follow that route in terms of workers' comp and how companies protect themselves?
Mm-hmm. So from the carrier standpoint, they've determined that you can have cannabis in your system as long as you being on cannabis did not cause the accident, which is a huge gray. That's about as gray area as it gets, because now you have other employees, you know, saying, yes, he was, no, he was, you know. So do you have friends that protect you? Do you have enemies at the workplace that want to see you gone? You know, his eyes were red. Well, like, it's allergy season in Albuquerque, you know. That could easily be an issue too. So while it's pretty broad, that there's good in broad and there's scary in broad. So it's a little bit of both.
So if your employee has a medical card and this forklift accident happens, what does that mean for you as a company?
Where am I in this who am I in this example?
Okay. Restate that. So if your client is a company.
Okay. I'm me. Like, I'm just a broker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they have this accident. The employee had a medical card.
So then we immediately go into the claim details. So document. When did it happen? Who was the manager? You know, et cetera. So you get the loss report first. Mm-hmm. Then you talk to the owner about, hey, has any employee problems in the past, any accidents in the past, multiple work comp claims, you know, those kinds of things. So you get all the details. And then with the details, the claims adjuster, myself, and the owner kind of then talk about, hey, what's going on here? And so it's very diverse. It could be anything from absolutely he was high during the accident to all the way to no, they have a medical cannabis card, but no, this employee was fine. And then the carrier ultimately makes that decision. I cannot speak to the claim covering process.
Okay.
I just help facilitate the process. And then I can push back if the owner thinks it's wrong, then we can push back on the carrier. We have those conversations and we have very good carrier relationships for this reason.
I see. Mm-hmm. So they're more likely to get covered.
In my opinion, much more likely for the common sense reasons.
Yeah.
Of course, they have cannabis in their system. Whether they got in an accident or not, they were going to. Somebody that didn't have a medical card, why were you? And up until April 1st, it was illegal. So if you did have it before April 1st, you were already breaking the law, so you were in trouble as is.
Another panelist at the event was business attorney Seth Gardenschwartz. Seth, along with the other panelists, urge entrepreneurs and property owners to cover all of their bases before taking that leap into the cannabis industry. Here's Seth talking to the crowd about the difference between having just a good idea versus being fully prepared.
So we're in an interesting place right now. I don't think we're saturated. I think there are many people who are interested in jumping into this market because it's exciting, and that's absolutely true. And there's opportunity. That's absolutely true. When we talk to people who are new to the industry, who are interested in getting started, one of the first questions we ask is, what is your prior business experience? Because this is not an easier business than opening an auto body repair place. This is probably a more difficult business. There's lots of more difficult tax regulations, lots of more difficult, you know, state regulations. There's lots of friction with, you know, sites and all those other things. So it's a difficult space. Another thing that we see is people saying, because of that perhaps lack of business experience, they say, oh, we want to be a vertically integrated micro licensee, right? That's a type of license where you can do three things under one license. And they're gonna raise $250,000. Like, dude, you're not gonna do one thing well for $250,000. You need $1 million to do one thing well, roughly, you know? And if you're gonna do one thing, grow. That's our observation from this vantage point, because there is a ton of demand. You think about 50% of the sales last month were new sales, were sales that were either didn't exist before, or were black market sales, or were being spent in Colorado. So in the craft beer business, everyone says, dude, we're gonna make the best beer. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. No one's ever thought of that. In this space, people say the same thing, right? They say, oh, we're gonna grow the best weed, the best cannabis. Like, look, the established brands have their top tier product. They're growing it indoors. They're hopefully branding it. If they're buying something, they're buying mid-grade product that they're gonna turn into edibles and cartridges and other stuff. Be the quality, consistent vendor for that, and you got yourself a business. Like that's a really solid business to business. But you can brand yourself, you can own that space, and there is definitely runway from our perspective in that space. How long is that gonna last? If I could predict the future, I would charge more per hour.
So what does balancing risk and reward look like in practice? Trishelle Kirk, the CEO of Everest Cannabis Company, said it's tough, but can be done.
Another question we've found in some of our reporting is that sometimes people working in this industry, like your employees maybe, they have trouble getting mortgages or leasing. Yeah, so what do you do for that? That's hard for you to recruit a workforce.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the really frustrating things about being a cannabis employee is you have a W-2, you have paychecks, you're getting your taxes taken out, you're doing everything right. And in many ways, cannabis is far more stable than other industries, like the hospitality industry, for example, over the last couple of years. But it can be difficult to find someone who's willing to write a mortgage or refinance your house. There are ways to do it. There are mortgage brokers you can work with, just like, you know, companies like Southwest Capital Bank, Airy Group, that are finding a way to work with cannabis companies and really provide employees with the same benefits that anybody else has. Those exist in New Mexico. So we have employees that have successfully been able to, you know, get mortgages. I was successfully able to refinance my house last year as a cannabis. My only source of income is, you know, my cannabis job, and but it is tough. And that when we talk about the stigma, you know, that doesn't feel good for people who are finally in jobs where they can, you know, really grow and expand their careers. They want to take the next step to building generational wealth. A lot of the people in my company, they're the first people in a position to buy a home. And to be met with roadblocks when you're doing your job and moving up and making good money is really disheartening for a lot of people. But luckily, there's great people in New Mexico that really want to encourage cannabis employees to be able to join the homeowners market.
At this point, with all the legal ambiguities over cannabis, it shouldn't surprise anyone that the industry deals with a lot of cash. During the panel, Shannon Cox with Southwest Capital mentioned cash deposits that smell heavily of cannabis. She later told us those deposits really do smell like cannabis, which raises the question, how do companies transport that money from southern New Mexico, where there are no Southwest Capital branches, to Albuquerque, Well, Trishelle said Everest does it by crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's.
So I have a dispensary in Las Cruces. I have one in Sunland Park, just south of Las Cruces. I'm about to open my second Las Cruces location in the next week. And what we do for banking is we have the banks, Southwest Capital has partnered with a company that picks up our cash and brings it to Albuquerque for deposit.
Okay, what about the checkpoints?
So the checkpoints do not, we've never had an issue with the checkpoint with cash going through in an armored vehicle. So it is an armored cash service just like any other business would have. And as of, we haven't had any issues going through.
Okay.
Who takes on that cost of the courier service?
So with Southwest Capital Bank, we take on the cost of the armored car vehicle. We also have an account with Airy Bank, which is out of U.S. Eagle, and they take on the cost out of that bank.
Does that mean you have to pass that cost along in your product to customers?
You know, at some level, all of our costs are passed on for product. It is expensive. There's, as far as I know, only one company that will transport cannabis cash to the bank to be deposited. And so, but they do a wonderful job. They do really try and work with us, especially understanding that it's cannabis. You know, we need cash pickups minimum 6 days a week in order to stay safe, 7 days a week in some locations. And they do a very good job. But so far, there's just one group in town. And so, you know, that as the industry grows, I expect to see some fluctuation in costs there that could ultimately impact our end costs.
To property owners and entrepreneurs, Shannon Cox with Southwest Capital says there's no such thing as too much preparation.
I would say just educate yourself and prepare yourself. This isn't an industry that you can decide, I'm going to get into the cannabis industry and I'm going to be up and going by next month. It's not going to happen. You need to do your homework. You need to do your background. Get yourself organized. Get your documents together. Find an institution that's going to bank you because there aren't many of them out there. Now, the good news is that I'm seeing more of the established banks wanting to maybe get into business with indirect cannabis businesses, anybody that doesn't touch the product. They're still shying away from direct. But some of the, you know, real estate companies that are leasing to cannabis tenants are now finding an easier time in finding a bank sometimes. But you've still got to be very open with your banker as to what you're doing. Don't lie to your banker because they're going to find out and they're going to kick you out. So if you go to your financial institution that you've been with for 10 years and say, this is what I'm doing and this I want, you know, before I get started, how do you feel about this? Your bank says no. Well, you're going to need some time to go find an option out there. Now, more of them, you know, the banks are the same way. They're thinking, wow, we can make some money off of this. Let's all jump into this. Same thing. It's not going to happen. There's a year's worth of work that you have to put in place before you're ready to bank the cannabis industry. It takes a specialized group of people, both in the cash vault and in the compliance area. You're going to have to spend a lot of money on some systems, and you're going to have some consultants. And it's the same thing with the cannabis industry. Make sure that you've educated yourself and you are ready. Don't expect that you're going to be doing this within a month or 3 months. Sometimes it can take a good year to get ready and get all the pieces in place, and you need to expect that.
Before we wrap up this episode, I wanted to include some updates on my reporting for New Mexico Political Report. First, if you haven't heard, a long-running court battle between the state's Taxation and Revenue Department and a cannabis company over taxes officially ended late last month. We'll leave a link in the description, but the Cliff's Notes version is that a ruling by the State Court of Appeals that medical cannabis companies were not required to pay gross receipts taxes was upheld. What that means is that the state is expected to issue about $15 million in refunds to a group of medical cannabis producers that paid taxes prior to the enactment of the Cannabis Regulation Act. Secondly, the same department issued guidance earlier this month to recreational use cannabis companies that says the state's cannabis excise tax will be applied to sales totals. Then gross receipts taxes will be applied. The cannabis business owners I spoke to said they were under the impression that the two taxes would be applied independently. So there's no question that the industry and everyone involved are still working the kinks out.
So Andy, explain to me why that's a big deal. Like, why is it important for cannabis businesses that the excise tax would be applied to sales totals and then GRT gets applied?
Practically speaking, it's a very small dollar amount. I did my own math, and if you applied them independently versus the way that the state is saying they should be applied, it's about a dollar difference, 84 cents difference. But of course, that adds up. The bigger issue that some of the companies that I spoke with, they're concerned because they've basically been charging the customers those taxes independently. So that means that they have not collected enough money from people to pay the state. So most of the companies, I think, have some reserves and they're going to make it through. I think most of their frustration was they wanted prior notice that this is how it is applied.
So now they have to change the way they're charging tax to customers so that they can basically have a pass through to the state.
That's right. And so just a quick reminder that both of these taxes are responsibility of the business owners, that there's no requirement that they actually pass this along. As we heard from Trishelle, I think earlier in this episode, that ultimately everything gets passed along to customers, whether you build it into your price of doing business, cost of doing business, excuse me, or actually put a line item on the receipt. So I think probably after this month of tax collection, folks will start applying taxes to customers the same as what they're going to apply to the state.
Thanks, as always, to our listeners. If you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to catch episodes as soon as they're released. And follow us on Instagram at growingforward_CannaNM.
If you're enjoying the podcast and would like to support the work we've done, please consider donating a few bucks. You can find a donation link at nmpoliticalreport.com, and you should be able to leave a note with your donation that you're supporting Growing Forward. Special thanks to Catherine Connolly for designing our logo, and a huge thanks to our producer, Kevin McDonald, for his tireless work behind the scenes.